Peter Fungabera made time for them in the early morning, and they drove out together to his home in the McIlwain Hills. A servant showed them through to the general's office, a huge, sparsely furnished room that overlooked the lake and had once been the billiard room. One wall was covered with a blown-up map of the entire territory. It was flagged with multicoloured markers. There was a long table under the windows, covered with reports and dispatches and parliamentary papers, and a desk of red African teak in the centre of the uncarpeted stone floor. Peter Fungabera rose from the desk to greet them. He was barefooted and dressed in a simple white loincloth tied at the hip. The bare skin of his chest and arms glowed as though it had been freshly oiled, and the muscles moved beneath it like a sack full of living cobras. Clearly Peter Fungabera kept himself in a warrior's peak of fighting condition. "Excuse my undress," he smiled as he came to greet them, "but I really am more at ease when I can be completely African." There were low stools of intricate carved ebony set in front of the desk. "I will have chairs brought," Peter offered. "I have few white visitors here." "No, no," Sally Ann settled easily on one of the stools. "You know I am always pleased to see you, but I am due in the house at 10:00, Peter Fungabera hurried them. "I'll come to it without wasting time," Sally Ann agreed. "We think we know who the master poacher is." Peter had been about to seat himself at the desk, but now he leaned forward with his fists on the desktop, and his gaze was sharp and demanding. "You said I had only to give you the name and you would smash him," Sally Ann reminded him, and Peter nodded. "Give it to me," he ordered. But Sally Ann related her sources and her deductions, just as she had to Craig. Peter Fungabera heard her out in silence, frowning or nodding thoughtfully, as he followed her reasoning. Then she gave her conclusion, the last name left on her list. "Comrade Minister Tungata Zebiwe," Peter Fungabera repeated softly after her, and at last he sank back onto his own chair and picked up his leather-covered swagger stick from the desk. He stared over Sally Ann's head at the map-covered wall, slapping the baton into the rosy pink palm of his left hand. The silence drew out until Sally Ann had to ask, "Well?" Peter Fungabera dropped his gaze to her face again. "You have chosen the hottest coal in the fire for me to pick up in my bare hands," he said. "Are you sure that you have not been influenced by Comrade Zebiwe's treatment of Mr. Craig Mello?" "That is unworthy," Sally Ann told him softly. "Yes, I suppose it is," Peter Fungabera looked at Craig. "What do you think?" "He was my friend, and he has done me great kindness." "That was once upon a time," Peter pointed out. "Now he has declared himself your enemy." "Still, I like and admire him." "And yet," Peter prodded gently. "And yet, I believe Sally Ann may be on the right spoor," Craig conceded unhappily. Peter Fungabera stood up and crossed the floor silently to stand before the vast war map. "Their whole country is a tinderbox," he said, staring at the coloured flags. "The Matabele are on the point of a rebellion. Here, here, here. Their guerrillas are gathering in the bush." He tapped the map. "We have been forced to nip the plotting of their more irresponsible leaders who were moving towards armed revolt. Nkomo is in forced retirement. Two of the Matabele cabinet members have been arrested and charged with high treason. Tungata Zebiwe is the only Matabele still in the cabinet. He commands enormous respect even outside his own tribe, while the Matabele look upon him as their only remaining leader. If we were to touch him..." "You're going to let him go?" Sally Ann said hopelessly. "He'll get away with it. So much for your socialist paradise. One law for the people, another for the..." "Be silent, woman," Peter Fungabera ordered, and she obeyed. He returned to his desk. "I was explaining to you the consequences of hasty action. Arresting Tungata Zebiwe could plunge the entire country into bloody civil war. I didn't say that I would not take action, but I certainly would do nothing without proof positive, and the testimony of independent witnesses of impeccable impartiality to support my actions. He was still staring at the map across the room. Already the world accuses us of planning tribal genocide against the Matabele, while all we are doing is maintaining the rule of law and searching for a formula of accommodation with that warlike, intractable tribe. At the moment, Tongata Zebiwe is our only reasonable and conciliatory contact with the Matabele. We cannot afford to destroy him lightly. He paused, and Sally Ann broke her silence. One thing I have not mentioned, but which Craig and I have discussed, if Tongata Zebiwe is the poacher, then he is using the profits to some special end. He gives no visible evidence of extravagance, but we know there is a connection between him and dissidents. Peter Fungabera's expression had set hard, and his eyes were terrible. If it is Zebiwe, I will have him, he promised himself, more than to her. But when I do, I will have proof for the world to see, and he will not escape me. Then you'd best move pretty damn quickly, Sally Ann advised him tartly. Well, you've picked a good time to sail. The yacht broker stood in Bawu's cockpit and looked nautical in his double-breasted blazer and marine cap with golden anchor device. $700 from Bergdorf Goodman. His tan was even and perfect. Sunlamp at the NY Athletic Club. There was a fine web of wrinkles around his piercing blue eyes, not from squinting through a sextant, nor from tropical suns on far oceans and coral beaches, Craig was certain, but from perusing price tags and check figures. Interest rates right down, people are buying yachts again. It was like discussing the terms of a divorce with a lawyer, or the arrangements with a funeral director. Bawu had been part of his life for too long. She's in good shape, all tight and shipshape, and your price is sensible. I'll bring some people to see her tomorrow. Just make sure I'm not here, Craig warned him. I understand, Mr. Mello. The man could even sound like an undertaker. Ash Levy also sounded like an undertaker when Craig telephoned. However, he sent an office messenger down to the marina to collect the first three chapters Craig had completed in Africa. Then Craig went to lunch with Henry Pickering. It really is good to see you. Craig had forgotten how much he had grown to like this man in just two short meetings. Let's order first, Henry suggested, and decided on a bottle of the Grand Zechersert. Courageous fellow, Craig smiled. I'm always too afraid to pronounce it in case they think I'm having a sneezing fit. Most people have the same reluctance. Must be why it's the least known of the world's truly great wines. Keeps the price down, thank God. Appreciatively, they nosed the wine and gave it the attention it deserved. Then Henry set his glass down. Now tell me what you think of General Peter Fungabera, he invited. It's all in my reports. Didn't you read them? I read them, but just tell me all the same. Sometimes a little thing may come out in conversation that just didn't get into a report. Peter Fungabera is a cultivated man. His English is remarkable. His choice of words, his powers of expression, but it all has a strong African accent. In uniform, he looks like a general officer in the British Army. In casual clothes, he looks like the star of a TV series, but in a loincloth, he looks what he really is, an African. And that's what we tend to forget with all of them. We all know about Chinese inscrutability and British phlegm, but we seldom consider that the black African has a special nature. There, Henry Pickering murmured smugly. That wasn't in your reports. Go on, Craig. We think them slow-moving by our own bustling standards, and we do not realize that it's not indolence, but the deep consideration they bring to any subject before acting. We consider them simple and direct, when really they are the most secretive and convoluted of people, more tribally clannish than any Scot. They can maintain a blood feud over 100 years like any Sicilian. Henry Pickering listened intently, prodding him with a leading question only when he slowed. Once he asked, something that I still find a little confusing, Craig, the subtle difference between the terms Matabele, Indabele, and Sindabele. Can you explain? A Frenchman calls himself a Français, but we call him a Frenchman. A Matabele calls himself an Indabele, but we call him a Matabele. Ah, Henry nodded. And the language he speaks is Sindabeli, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. Actually, the word Matabele seems to have acquired colonial connotations since independence. Their talk ranged on easily, relaxed and free-flowing. So that it was with a start of surprise that Craig realized that they were almost the last party left in the restaurant, and that the waiter was hovering with the bill. What I was trying to say, Craig concluded, is that colonialism has left Africa with a set of superimposed values. Africa will reject them and go back to its own, and probably be the happier for it, Henry Pickering finished for him. Well, Craig, you have certainly earned your wage. I am truly pleased that you're going back. I can see that you will soon be our most productive field agent in that theatre. When do you return? I only came to New York to pick up a check. Henry Pickering laughed, that delightful purring laugh of his. You hint with a sledgehammer. I shudder at the prospect of a direct demand from you. He paid the bill and stood up. Our house lawyer is waiting. First you sign away your body and soul, and then I give you drawing rights up to the total of $5 million. The interior of the limousine was silent and cool, and the suspension ironed out most of the trauma of the New York street surfaces. Now enlarge on Sally Ann Jay's conclusions regarding the head of the poaching ring, Henry invited. At this stage I don't see any alternative candidate for the master poacher, perhaps even the leader of the dissidents. Henry was silent for a moment. Then he said, What do you make of General Fungabera's reluctance to act? Well, he's a prudent man, and an African. He will not rush in. He'll think it out deeply, lay his net with care, but when he does act, I think we'll all be surprised at how devastatingly swift and decisive it'll be. I'd like you to give General Fungabera all the assistance you can. Full cooperation, please, Craig. You know Tungata was my friend. Divided loyalty? I don't think so. Not if he's guilty. Good. My board is very happy with your achievement so far. I'm authorized to increase your remuneration to $60,000 per annum. Lovely, Craig grinned at him. That'll be a big help on the interest payment on $5 million. It was still light when the cab dropped Craig at the gates of the marina. The smog of Manhattan was transformed by the low angle of the sun to a lovely purple mist which softened the grim silhouettes of the great towers of concrete. As Craig stepped on the gangplank, the yacht dipped slightly under his weight and alerted the figure in the cockpit. Ash! Craig was taken by surprise. Ash Levy, the fairy princess of struggling authors. Baby, Ash came down the deck to him with a landlubber's uncertain steps. I couldn't wait. I had to come to you right away. I'm touched. Craig's tone was acid yellow. Always when I don't need help, you come at a gallop. Ash Levy ignored it and put a hand on each of Craig's shoulders. I read it. I read it again, and then I locked it in my safe. His voice sank. It's beautiful. Craig checked his next jibe and searched Ash Levy's face for signs of insincerity. Instead, he realized that behind the gold-rimmed spectacles, Ash Levy's eyes were steely with tears of emotion. It's the best stuff that you've ever done, Craig. It's only 3 chapters. It hit me right in my guts. It needs a lot of polishing. I doubt you, Craig. I'll admit that, I doubted you. I was beginning to believe that you didn't have another book in you, but this, it was just too much to take in. I've been sitting here for the last few hours going over it in my mind, and I find I can recite parts of it by heart. Craig studied him carefully. The tears might be a reflection of the sunset off the water. Ash removed his spectacles and blew his nose loudly. The tears were genuine, yet Craig could still scarcely believe them. There was only one positive test. Can you advance on it, Ash? Now he didn't need money, but he needed the ultimate reassurance. Well, how much do you need, Craig? 200 grand? You really like it, then? Craig let go a small sigh, as the writer's eternal doubts were dispelled for a brief blessed period. Let's have a drink, Ash. Let's do better than that, said Ash. Let's get drunk.